There you go. Okay. Welcome to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where three Australians talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode by episode.
Oh, I'm Chris.
Oh, I'm Mabel.
Oh, I'm Megan.
Crikey.
Crikey.
Bloody oath.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Nailed it, you guys.
Nailed it.
Can't believe we haven't done that before.
Same. Unbelievable. Today we are discussing episode 1.11, the penultimate episode before the finale of season one. It's Out of Mind, Out of Sight. Out of Mind, Out of Sight. Oh, also story by Joss Whedon. Guess he got involved in season one.
Mm.
Written by Ashley Gable and Thomas A. Swiden. Directed by Reza Badiyi.
Do you guys notice that some episodes, like not even story-wise, but just written better sometimes?
Yeah.
No, like, yes. And just in the way that sometimes an episode's written and they really use the characters' voices and they really get the characters' voices and the sort of sarcasm in it. And other times, just not at all.
Yeah.
And this one, I think they really get it. I think they really get it in this episode.
So I've seen an interview with, I think it was Marty Noxon, where she talks about sometimes, and I don't think she's in the show yet, but she will come, she becomes a writer and a producer on the show. In actual fact, she's showrunner in season six. And she talks about the fact that sometimes when they're in the writer's room, they'll write a line and they'll have attributed it to one of the characters, and then they'll be reading through the script and they're like, actually no, that's not a Xander line, that's a Willow line, we have to give that line to Willow. So there's actually like there really is a voice for each of the
good
characters.
As it should be.
So yeah, quite interesting.
It's a bit harder in these early stages too, so
definitely. This one does quite a good job of it. So we definitely get Cordy's voice right here at the beginning as she's walking through the halls.
Finally a Cordy episode.
Definitely, Cordy-centric.
Yeah.
Yes.
Finally, has that happened? Yeah. She's just been like a sort of forced in and there we go.
She has been. This one is really, truly, you know, all about me, me, me. So Cordy's talking about the school, end of school spring dance. Can't wear off the rack because it gives her hives. And then Mitch is like, you know, oh, wear blue to match your eyes. My eyes are hazel, Helen Keller.
Great line. The boyfriend here, just really quick, the boyfriend looks like a mate of mine.
Uh-huh.
Who is named Mitch. Turns out he's also
his name is Mitch!
Just as many chances, yeah.
I thought his name was Rich.
I did at the beginning too, but no, it's definitely Mitch.
I actually think
they might call him Rich at the beginning because when I started typing the episode, I was like, Rich.
I could have sworn his name was Rich. Oh my God, did they change his name?
I think they changed his name partly because I thought the exact same thing and then I was like, oh no, it's Mitch. Did I write Rich somewhere? Why did I do that? Oh my God.
They must change his name.
They must.
That's ridiculous.
I'm going back and watching it again.
Oh my God.
Yeah, definitely.
He's never going to be on Name This Minor Character this week. No way. With two names.
No way.
Rich, Mitch, double dipping into the minor character raffles.
Trying to get two goes around, he is. Trying to get two goes. So Buffy trips in front of them and drops a bunch of weapons.
Oh my God. She makes it so much more awkward than it has to be.
She is not good at pretending she's not a slayer. Like, seriously, she's just not. She's just not. I do enjoy Cordy.
I mention history?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's in the history club. That's her excuse. Fuck. I like Cordy choosing that moment to remind everyone about the time that Buffy acted crazy and attacked her.
Love the callback.
Yeah, I do love
I love
it.
The callback. We're existing. This is all happened. We're in a world.
Time is passing. Yeah. There is a past, present, and future.
Damn right. I like it. Not enough shows do this.
This show does do a good job of often calling back to stuff.
Damn right. I like it.
So we're studying Shakespeare in English, Shylock's. So look, real quick tangent. I know I've been tangenting a lot lately, but I have a real quick tangent because every time I watch this episode, right, I'm always weirdly immediately go to the Disney movie, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Now, here's my reason. Stay with me.
Chris's face.
Have you ever seen it? The Hunchback of Notre Dame?
Have you?
Yes. I want to hear Megan out.
Stay with me. Because she says the quote. She says the quote that Shylock does. Shush. No, you're going to be like, whoa.
I'm waiting.
She talks about the Shylock quote in Merchant of Venice. You know, if you prick us, do we not bleed, right? Mm. Now, and then she says, how does this relate to us as outcasts, right? Now, in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, one of the gargoyles quotes this and says, if you prick us, do we not bleed? If you moisten us, do we not grow mold? Which I love, right? Yeah. So that, and then also the main gypsy character, the female, sings the song, God Help the Outcasts. So it's like those two things just like always marry together in my mind, and I immediately think about The Hunchback of Notre Dame every single time
God
I see this.
Help the outcasts.
I won Stedford when I was 13 or 14 years old. I won the Toowoomba Stedford musical theatre section with that song, God Help the
Toowoomba
Outcasts.
Toowoomba Stedford. Hotly contested. Stedford. That's some respect.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I think I won that one anyway. It was one of them.
Who's going to argue with you,
right? I sung it,
right?
Who's going to
argue with you?
It was sung.
Yeah. Nobody come at me about that. once again, Cordy's in fine form. Cordy's in fine form this entire episode. Yeah. Because
it's all about her.
Firing on all cylinders.
Her views of the injustice of man. How about colour me totally self-involved? So Cordy mentioned something when she's fighting back against Willow here called the Twinkie defence. Did you guys hear that reference?
I'm going to argue about bringing this up because it was a weird thing for her to mention.
So it's a derisive label for an improbable legal defence.
Yes.
It's not recognised as a real, like, legal defence, but it's a catch-all term coined by reporters during their coverage of the trial of a defendant, Dan White.
Who killed Harvey Milk.
How the hell did you know that?
I know all about this. I know the Twinkie defence. Yeah.
You know the Twinkie defence. Yeah. Well, you tell us then. What am I doing?
Oh, no, you did it really well.
So why the Twinkie defence?
I don't know why she brought it up, but basically this guy named Dan White, this politician who killed another politician, Harvey Milk. Harvey Milk is really, really popular as a gay activist, really big in the San Francisco community. Yeah. Still an icon.
There's a movie called Milk you can watch.
And Sean Penn won an Oscar for portraying him. And Dan White, who sort of never really got along with him, and one day everything sort of boiled over and he pulled his gun out, walked around in the I don't know anymore what you call it, the political, what do you call it, like town hall, I guess? Some town hall.
Like
but
a
where
city
they all
hall.
Work,
oh, like the council
the Senate
office,
or whatever. Yeah, the council office is whatever.
Parliamentary office.
Yeah. Went over, shot one bloke, and went over and shot Harvey Milk, and got arrested, and it was really out of character for him.
Yep.
Because he's very much a politician, like all the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And when he got tried. There was no real excuse because he just did it cold-blooded, but they didn't want to put this guy away because he's just, you know, he's straight-laced. He wasn't going to do anything again. It was just,
A straight white male. Yeah, of course they didn't want
to
put him away.
And a politician, a very powerful politician. And so his lawyers created the Twinkie defense in that his diet had been really bad in the weeks leading up to the murders, and he's been eating a lot of Twinkies and not healthy like he should have been. And that's how they sort of got away with it, basically. I mean, I'm pretty sure he still did time, but not as much time as he should have done for killing two people.
Yeah.
And it was called the Twinkie defense.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, I'm still not sure how that related to Cordy's scene. But,
not at all. Not at all. She just threw it in there. It was really weird.
I think they've like it's become just a term for an improbable legal defense. You know,
exactly.
And like it's basically like that's bullshit. It doesn't. You know, you can't use that as a defense kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a Twinkie defense. Yeah. I think that's just become a term. Yeah. But there you go. Thank you. So after class, Cordy goes to see Miss Miller to chat about her paper. And Miss Miller wants to help her because, you know, Cordy's actually a like proper student who cares about her work, it seems.
In this episode, there's a lot of forcing Cordelia
to be a person.
To be a person.
Well-rounded person.
This one I like. This I like. I like that she's a good student. I think that sort of fits into what her character has been. Over the past season.
I think so too.
I like that she's she cares.
Does no one else think that this part of her character contradicts the fact that she's never been in the library and has too much of a life to
be because
she
has a life.
Library?
Yeah.
I think that's fine.
I think maybe she goes to a different library.
I think in her head, it's all about being cool. And I think being smart and doing well is important.
To her as well.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be caught dead in the library, but I do need to do well.
I do need to do well still. She cares enough about her future to care about that, even though she's trying to maintain this cool popularity thing.
Yeah.
You know, which we see at the end is really something that she really does have to work at.
Mm.
You know, she would actually choose not to be that way if she could. And that's potentially why she's as cartoonish about it as she is in some ways, maybe because she's trying too hard to do something that's not natural for her.
Mm.
You know, she actually wants to just be nice and do well in school, but she's trying really hard to be cool and popular. So she
you are Cordy's biggest fan.
Oh, big time.
I'm not in this episode. I'm going to have feelings.
Okay.
Interesting.
You're going to have feelings.
Yep.
Look forward to that.
Wait, you have feelings?
I never have feelings. What? Right? It's such a new experience for us, for me to have feelings on this podcast. Like, it's so new. Oh, man. So we cut to yet another locker room scene. Love a good locker room scene.
It's getting repetitive.
Uh-huh.
Not just the locker room scene, but the shot of like the attacker's perspective, like the classic Jaws shark shot.
Yeah.
And like just wandering around, sneaking up in the locker room.
Dun.
It's getting very repetitive.
It's always different. It wasn't a puppet this time.
Yeah, it was from a human person's perspective.
Yeah.
Also, so this is obviously we're following Rich Mitch here.
Rich Mitch.
Who clearly has a coke problem. Can we just talk about the fact that he definitely has a coke problem?
I'm sorry,
he comes
what?
Out of that shower and he's all like...
Didn't notice
he's
that.
He's sniffing a lot. He has
people
a coke
sniff
problem.
Without doing cocaine.
Mr. Sniffy McSnifferton. Definitely has a coke problem.
Probably just had a cold.
I've blown my nose in the shower many a time.
Oh, look, I am the first. I literally cannot eat soup without like needing 50 tissues. But he is sniffing a lot coming out of that shower, I'm just
saying. Okay. It would explain because he's very slim. Like he's quite, like especially for a jock. Yep. Like I feel like his character's supposed to be a jock, but he's quite sort of slim.
That's all the cocaine. Yep.
It's all cocaine.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I feel like the three of us, someone's going to be on Rich Mitch's side, and I don't think it's fair to just assume he's a coke addict. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Do you know why I want him to be a coke addict? Because maybe that explains why he says, it's not her arm I'm looking to be on. Gross. Gross, Rich Mitch. You're disgusting.
Oh.
More locker room talk. Did you not hear that? The friends are like, you know, oh, you've got to look good to be on Cordy's arm. And he's like, oh, it's not her arm I'm looking to be on.
Yeah, actually, I remember listening to that line. Okay. What does that mean? I mean, like, what does he want to be on?
I mean,
on?
He wants to be on her, I'm assuming. Like, be
okay,
like.
So just like.
Like on top
her.
Of her, I'm guessing.
Yeah, okay.
Is
it's
what
a weird
I took
thing
from
to say.
That. It's like, it's not even a well done.
Yeah.
Sexual insult.
I feel like it's one of those things where you just say it with like sexual innuendo in your voice.
Yeah.
And it gets the idea across, but then you're like, hang on, what did that guy just say? Like,
yeah.
is that I'm sitting on a chair.
Yeah.
It's like, you're like, oh, it means sex, but I don't know why I know
how
that means
mean
sex.
Just the tone. It's all the tone. Yeah. So yeah, I'm kind of glad this guy gets beat up because gross.
Yeah.
I do enjoy the giggle from nowhere and then the floating bat just beating the guy up.
I feel like we can pick on Buffy a lot for the puppet episode 2 weeks ago. Aww. Is a great example of how it does look really weird how this puppet was like holding a knife and it looked really dodgy and really weird. But in all these scenes with the floating bat and the floating knife.
The floating needle.
Yeah, I couldn't see any strings or anything like that.
Actually,
I was kind of
well done. I was thinking that.
It was
good. I was super into it. I thought it was filmed really well.
This is well done.
Mm.
So we're in the halls and Buffy's feeling left out as Willow and Xander reminisce on a story about Cordy being a dick.
Yeah, I don't I just don't buy it.
I don't either.
The whole inside joke thing. I mean,
it's terribly done.
It's
shoehorned in.
It's terrible. I mean, not even just them leaving Buffy out because of an inside joke. I just mean like the way they're talking about this joke and they're talking like
it's just like
It seems so fake.
It's so fake.
To the point where I'm watching it and I'm like, are they faking? Like, are they faking it in the storyline as well? Because it just seems so fake.
Really quick, there's this bit right around here where Cordy's like going for class president. Not class president.
No, May Queen.
May Queen, yeah. And
she's
handing out all the things. And then like the weird interaction with Buffy's like, oh, you know what? I don't need the weirdo fringe vote.
Yeah.
And look, I'll humble brag. Not humble at all, actually.
Humble brag.
I was school captain in primary school and high school.
Shut up!
And let me tell you right now, do not underestimate the weirdo fringe vote. That is the most important vote there is.
Really
kids,
is.
If you're listening to me,
go for the weirdo fringe vote.
That's good advice.
It's an important vote.
Very
right.
important.
Also, so I was just like, I was seeing the scene in my head in the locker room. Has anyone else noticed? Because it comes up in this episode again, and it's come up in previous episodes. I just find this really weird. Anytime you see inside Willow's locker, there's a picture of her and Giles standing side by side on the inside door of her locker. And I don't know who in the prop department was like.
That's like, a good idea.
Like, why not a picture of her and Xander and Buffy? But it's a picture of her just standing next to Giles on what looks like school grounds. And it's on the it's the only picture in her locker.
This is the 11th episode of Buffy I've ever watched. I'm very new to the show. And I just never pick up on details like
it
this.
It happened a few
ever.
Episodes ago as well. And I forgot to mention it. But like, and it just came back this episode. And I was like,
so funny.
And it's just, it's in her locker. It's super weird.
I believe it was last episode, actually, there was a sticker in Willow's locker of Nerf Herder, who are the band who play the theme song for Buffy.
Oh, very cool.
That's a lot more appropriate.
That sounds like
something she would have in her locker.
Yeah. Way more appropriate. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's creepy. It's weird.
Just think about what would have had to happen, you know? I mean, like, they need to, like, they use film cameras. I guess they could have had a digital camera in the 90s. Actually have it developed and, like, stick
yeah,
it
like,
in.
Like, where were they to even pose for that photo? Why
Who
were they posing together for a
and
photo?
Like, why is that the one she puts in her locker? Yeah. Anyway.
It's that weird thing that happens in TV shows where they, like, and it'll happen in this one too, where they'll have, like, pictures that they've got framed, right? But it's literally just, like, a production picture of, like, a still from one of the camera scenes. Yeah. It's like, no one was taking that photo, you guys. No one was around you when that was happening to get that photo.
Yeah.
It is a truly annoying thing that happens in TV shows.
But yeah, just wanted to bring that up.
Very good. So they hear about Rich Mitch and they go to investigate. Buffy tries to go into the lockers immediately, just like waltz past Snyder. And he's like, hey, no.
You're a
obviously,
student. Stop interviewing students on campus grounds and stop going into crime scenes.
I feel like the principal's performance wasn't so creepy, then he'd be the most normal character in the show.
Dude,
don't go in there. It's a crime scene.
I enjoy his line here. There are no dead students here.
This week.
Yeah.
He gets
it.
It's got to be a tough job.
It would be
a tough job.
He's all worried about being sued.
Oh, yeah. Against the Beast, as the other beast. Lawyers call it.
Willow, when she's ad-libbing, the character of Willow ad-libbing story to try and cover things. I love it. I love it so much every time she does that.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
So good. Yeah. So the lockers say, look. So the Scooby start their investigation. What could it be? Maybe it's a vampire bat. Says Xander.
Yeah,
what, I'm alone
no one laughs.
No one laughs. It's not funny.
With all the messages, so they come up throughout, you know, look, listen, learn.
Yeah.
Who, like, so I, like, so Marcy, right?
Marcy's
crazy. Mm. Who are the messages for? They're for Cordelia.
I think they're for Cordelia.
It's.
But, just, like, how is she going to see that message?
Yeah, it's a super, like, it's, stupid. I mean, she's just setting everything up in a very, like, serial killer-y.
This is definitely one of those, like, it's just, like, one of those.
Yeah.
Fun things that they've added in the writer's room and thought was going to be cool. It just didn't really translate on screen, I don't reckon.
Yeah.
The look, listen, learn thing.
I just don't think
an extra layer of creepy just for the hell of it.
Yeah. I thought it fell pretty flat. My favorite part is just when it shows up in glitter at the end.
I wrote that down too. She took the time to write glitter.
That would have been a nightmare to
do. Oh, it's taken us so long.
But I appreciate the effort, Marcy. Thank you.
Yeah, good job, Marcy. You've really thought it through. You've started with red paint, you've gone for chalk, and then finally you've finished off with glitter, which, you know, they're at the dance. So it'll can leave that up for the whole of the dance.
Yeah, learning.
Woo! Glitter and learning.
Woo! Yeah.
So we cut to Cordy, who's really concerned. She missed fifth period because she went to the hospital to check on Mitch, and she's so worried about their pictures.
Yeah.
It's black and blue. How can I ever show those pictures to anyone?
And we have a flashback to almost this exact same scene with someone trying to talk to Cordy and Harmony while they're having a conversation.
It's all in sepia tone.
Yes, the only time they'll ever use sepia tone for flashbacks. In this episode.
Mm.
Yeah, they will have more flashbacks.
It's a weird scene. I didn't know what's going on.
You don't know what's going on at this point. And we cut back to regular day and then, oh no, Harmony's down the stairs.
This shot. So, like, the poor thing. Like, they had it like 6 different angles of her falling down the stairs. She had to fall down it so
it's
many
a
times.
Really long flight of stairs.
I feel bad for that stunt woman.
And like in one take, she was like going over like head first. The other one, she was just going down it on her shoulders. Like, she would have done so many different angles, so many different takes. I feel bad for the poor thing. It was pretty funny though.
That's pretty funny.
Pretty funny. Yeah, I had a good one.
So we hear the laughter again, and Buffy follows it this time and gets knocked by something invisible. What could it be? So Buffy quizzes Giles on ghosts, but looks like it's an invisible girl on their hands. And then, of course, Xander would use the power of invisibility to guard the girls' locker room.
Just how constantly proud he is of his creepiness. Like, he just loves launching it. You know, blue Angora sweater. I would protect the girls' locker room. The fact that he has T-shirts that say porn star on them and, like, 1 cent peep shows or something. Like, he keeps having these really seedy T-shirts in episodes.
Yeah.
He's just proud.
I've never been into a girl's locker room. And
that's
I feel
great
like
thing to know.
When I was that age, like, I sort of get the whole fantasy around it.
Yeah.
But even now at this age, I can't imagine there'd be much going on in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be pretty, like, about as grotty as the boys.
So Buffy starts the hunt. Is she wearing Angel's jacket in this scene? I'm pretty sure she is.
Really?
She like rocks up and it's nighttime in the school, and she's wearing leather pants, and I'm pretty sure she's wearing Angel's jacket. Angel jacket watch.
How? Like, so is the school always open at night?
I feel like it definitely is.
That's not normal.
Nope.
That's very.
I can't remember if I ever went to my school at night time. I mean, I did.
I like school concerts and stuff.
You know, in musical rehearsals and stuff, but like, I didn't even go into any of the classrooms and stuff.
Yeah,
I did spend a bit of time after hours in my school, and it was there were people around. I mean, it was a boarding school too, so
that makes a difference.
She stands outside and watches Cordy getting fitted for her dress. I feel like this is a. I feel like we've had a couple of moments in this episode. You know, the scene with Willow and Xander, and now this one with Buffy feeling really like the outsider and not a part of things.
And because she's like had this life previously in LA.
I wonder whether they've really because obviously this is a part of who she is, but I feel like they've exaggerated a little bit this episode, and perhaps because it allows her at first to really relate to Marcy, because she's having those same sort of feelings, that feeling of being outside and not a part of things.
I think that's what they were going for. I don't think they executed it very well. Like, particularly at the end when she says, you know, she's like, I tried to feel for you, like, I tried to understand, but you're just batshit crazy.
A raving lunatic.
But I think throughout the episode, I think they were trying for it, but I didn't really feel.
I don't think they got there.
I didn't feel a lot of relationship between Buffy and Marcy. With Cordy getting her dress fitted in school at night.
Yep, totally weird. Totally
mean,
not normal.
So, and like, who,
not
like,
normal at
all.
Oh,
yeah. What a weird thing to do.
I was like, what the actual fuck?
Like, well, girls do weird things, man. They have couches in bathrooms, so who knows? Who knows what's going on?
Well, we can tell you as a girl, not normal.
But like, okay, and I just, you. I clearly.
Like, you get your dress fitted at a fucking dressmaker's. If you're going to get a dress fitted.
Yeah. And just, I feel like they really tried to make this, well, whatever was happening in that room look interesting. You know, Buffy's looking in from the window, and like two of the girls are playing with this weird, like, colorful decoration thing and just like bouncing that up and down.
Yeah,
for
right.
Reason.
For like just randomly.
There's like
visual impact.
Yeah, 100%. And there's like 5 girls around Cordy just fitting her. Who are these people?
They're the Cordettes.
Who, like, why?
Is that what they're, that's, they get called something later. I'm pretty sure they're the Cordettes.
Cordettes sounds familiar to me.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing just hugely bothers me.
Yeah, I get it. Me too.
And
it's
so,
just, the whole thing is stupid. This is definitely like just a, this is like a plot, like a plot device.
And that's a super special like May Queen dress, and she hasn't been elected yet, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a dance regardless.
Yeah.
So she's going to be wearing a dress to the dance regardless.
It's a pretty fancy dress.
No one else has dresses yet, though. No one else is talking about having a dress. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Buffy hears a flute playing and goes off to follow it. Giles also hears something. Is it the flute?
Oh, my God.
It's Angel.
I do like the way they introduce him. Like, Giles is looking in the reflection. There's no one there, but then, like, Angel's actually next to him. I feel like that would be very. It would be very hard to not notice that he would, like.
In the room.
There's peripheral vision, you know? Like, he's looking and it's like he can see. Surely he can see Angel standing right next to him.
Is he next to him or behind him?
He's right next to him.
He's slightly behind.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with it.
I do have one question.
Sure.
Do any two characters have less chemistry on screen? Angel and Giles. Nothing.
You don't ship
on.
It? You don't ship it?
It was like they were in two completely different shows.
It was a really funny scene.
It was the first time they'd met, and it was just like they were both going for completely different things in the scene. It was all over the place.
Was Angel trying to sneak up on him? Like the fact.
I don't think he was.
He's
a sneaker.
So he was either standing next to Giles and Giles was somehow distracted by the empty reflection, or he had walked up silently and then just stopped right behind Giles and not said anything.
Giles had heard a noise, right?
Yeah.
So he was actively listening for noises.
Yeah.
So he would have heard even the slightest rustle of
clothing. Yeah, unless Angel was fucking sneaking up on him.
Look.
The whole interaction in that scene is really weird.
Yeah. I do enjoy the fact that he can't be around Buffy because he's in love with her, and Giles enjoys the poetry of the fact that a vampire is in love with
a slave. It's a really weird exchange, I find, from like Angel putting so much of his feelings on the table with Giles, who he's never really had
never
an interaction.
Yeah.
So they've, yeah.
This is their first time actually being on screen together, right?
Absolutely. I'm sure the actors didn't even meet before this. Like, just there's no chemistry. Two of my favourite characters, but they are not good together.
And it's just
going to watch the scene again. I didn't really know.
It's just kind of awkward because Angel hasn't been around for everything that's happened on, like, Buffy's side of things. So, to be honest, Angel doesn't know exactly what Giles knows about the situation. You know, he's assuming a lot. And then he's already giving, like, he's just very earnest about how he can't face Buffy, which I don't know. I just think it's like weirdly vulnerable to make with a complete stranger and you don't know what context they already have about the situation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's just kind of weird.
And then Giles being almost kind of like playful about, you know, the poetic blah thing. It's like, it's a really awkward, like, I'm going to try and befriend this vampire that Buffy has had a pseudo relationship
with. Well, he's the dad, right? He's like trying to like...
Yeah,
he's also kind of
nervous in the scene. He's kind of nervous the whole scene, which I didn't
figure
out.
Well, he knows he's an angel. He knows he's a vampire.
Yeah, that's what I think that's.
Plus, he's a very attractive vampire. So, I mean, that makes everyone nervous.
A little flushed. He'd
make anyone nervous in that situation. Yeah. But, I mean, it is very much, like, in terms of Giles being dad Giles, the interaction is very much like, oh, you know, your classic boyfriend comes to pick up the girlfriend. Yeah. She's still upstairs getting ready.
So
dad
they make
makes
awkward,
awkward
conversation. About the prophecies of the Slayer.
Yeah. And it's all like the whole intro. It's like you're not expecting Angel to show up. And then he's asking Giles about when, you know, he knows anything about the Master. And then the Codex
comes up. The reason why this scene is awkward is because of the Codex, right?
Yeah.
Basically, they needed a scene where the Codex comes into discussion.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that will come up later.
Yeah. Okay. And it's very, the whole scene's just super forced and random.
It's definitely
and awkward
forced.
And weird.
There's a lot of forced scenes in
this
scene.
And he just comes up and it's random and then, oh, the Codex, oh, good thing you stopped by, Angel, which is really out of character and you've never done before, but really good thing you did.
Good to meet you, mate.
Yeah, it's weird. It is a weird scene.
Look forward to seeing you again later in the episode.
It's a weird scene and I don't even care because Angel.
Oh.
We see our first glimpse of the Invisible Girl in another flashback.
Now. In the mirror, because Angel talks about, Angel has a bit of like,
Angel has
know,
a like, little
waxing lyric
moment.
Staring in a mirror forever and not seeing anyone.
Yeah, looking in a mirror and seeing nothing, it's an overrated pleasure.
That's
and we see Marcy looking in the mirror and Cordy walks into the bathroom treating her like absolute shit. So I just want to call Cordy out here because bullying sucks and it's shit. And I don't care what her excuse is, it's not okay. I have family who have suffered from bullying. I have suffered from bullying and it's fucking horrible and it's not okay. And I'm not cool with Cordy doing it.
Yeah, I mean, she's done it in almost every other scene she's been in Buffy. So, I mean, you could have brought this up sooner.
I guess I could have. No. She's a bitch in other scenes and like she does bully Willow at the beginning and I will agree with that. But like this particularly is just like it's next level brutal, I think.
Ignore her, right?
Like, they basically ignore her existence and when she tries to speak, they're like, why the fuck are you even talking?
Yeah.
Which it's just, yeah. It really struck a chord for me in this moment. I don't know why it struck a chord for me in this moment and no others, but it really did. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that bullying is not okay. Don't do it. And that there should be more consequences. Like, there should be more consequences of Cordy's bullying behavior, I think. Like, it's never really addressed.
Almost got murdered, so that's pretty close, right?
Well, yeah, but that's like a supernatural consequence. There was no, like, school consequences for her bullying. I just feel like it's like a classic example of, like, there never is. And I just,
like, how unrealistic would that be if a teacher walked in and fixed it all? Because that never, ever, ever happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really hard thing for schools to tackle.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's they very much have to come to it from, like, a very preventative kind of point.
So Cordy weirdly gets announced as the May Queen.
Oh my god, that old scene on the podium in the courtyard with the microphone and like all the kids kind of being there because I don't know, maybe it's lunchtime or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
But no one really seems.
There's not that many people around.
It doesn't
even
seem like they're interested in what's happening.
The only people interested are the two bodyguards in suits.
And why? Why is there like a podium?
Yeah. Man. Why is this whole thing announced days before the dance? Usually usually in TV shows that I've watched, American TV shows, the queen and the king are announced at the dance, right? Why is this announced days earlier? I don't understand. It just makes no sense to me.
So and the creepy security guard looking guys are in the scene. They're in an earlier scene as well, which I hadn't noticed before. Did you guys notice?
No, I didn't.
I think earlier on, I think when Harmony gets pushed down the stairs, they're in the background there as well.
Oh.
And I never noticed them before this watching.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So Willow brings Buffy a list of missing people and they find Marcy Ross is the name of the missing girl who seems the most likely candidate for the, she's the most recent disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
And since we know her name... This brings me to...
Don't. Negan, don't.
This week...
No.
Name that minor character.
Oh, God.
So, guys, look. We've had a celebrity already, right?
Ron Howard's mom.
It's a pretty big deal. This is a big deal. This is a real, actual person.
Recognized
celebrity.
Her as soon as she popped up.
Yep.
Yep. So we have Marcy Ross is the character. The quote that Wiki has for her is, "Hey moron, I'm invisible. How are you going to fight someone you can't see?" Which I quite enjoy. So obviously, yes, she has become invisible because nobody sees her. In her yearbook, everybody writes, "Have a nice summer," which is the social death toll. Death knoll is what I meant, I believe. Anyway, it's not important. Even the teachers don't recognize her, don't acknowledge her. So she turns invisible and ends up trying to kill Cordy. So she is played by Clea DuVall.
She's been in heaps.
Yep.
She has been in heaps. So she's actually also co-starred with Sarah Michelle Gellar in The Grudge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's in so much stuff.
She's so great.
I love her. She's really
good. So, personally, I know her from Girl Interrupted. That's the one I remember her from the most.
I'm all about But I'm a Cheerleader. That's where I know her
the most. But I'm a Cheerleader. Yeah, so she's actually quite a strong advocate for LGBTQI people, I believe. So she's done a lot of work in that space and been in a lot of, movies and TV shows around that. You can say something.
I know her from Heroes.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
She's covered Heroes. And The Mentalist. I'm pretty sure she's also in The Mentalist.
She's in The Mentalist?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, she's in The Astronaut's Wife?
Never heard of it.
Did you see that? No, that's Johnny Depp one, I'm pretty sure. The Astronaut's Wife, maybe? Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember.
How old is it?
I know The Time Traveler's Wife.
Oh, I just can't hardly wait. She's in two. Dude, come on.
Nah, it's on.
She's with Seth Green's in it as well.
Nah. Seth Green isn't in a lot of good stuff. I love Seth Green. He's one of my favourites.
Yeah.
He's a lot of trash.
You have seen Can't Hardly Wait, though. No. Come on. It's like the classic quintessential teenage movie from the 90s.
I'm sure there's more
never
quintessential
heard of it.
Teenage movies.
You guys don't even know. You just don't even know. Honestly, sometimes I just feel so alone. So old and alone in this podcast. so she's also, she's been in so many things. She's been in American Horror Story as well. And she was also in The Handmaid's Tale recently.
Ah.
Yes. And in Veep. Yeah, she's been in a heck of a lot of things. It's pretty exciting. This is like a proper celebrity now. Mm. Oh, and Argo. She was in Argo.
She just pops up in everything.
She's really good. I really like her.
She's one of those actresses. It's just like, oh, it's that guy. Or, yeah. You know, that girl.
So there you go. That is our name that minor character for the week.
Proper celebrity. Woo! Proper on Buffy.
Biggest
one yet. Yeah. Clea DuVall, amazing job. You are an incredible actress. Your work is amazing. Thank you for being on Buffy.
Her voice changes a lot in the episode between the flashbacks and her like crazy psycho voice.
I know, she gets a really good, I love her psycho voice.
Awesome. I love her psycho voice.
So awesome.
So
yeah.
Marcy being in the band club.
Yeah.
Is that more about them being able to include a creepy flute?
Yeah.
Or exacerbating that she is a loser?
Creepy flute, I think. And I think it's
as like a muso in high school, I'm going to hope that it's the first.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a muso through and through. I was in stage band in high school.
We weren't.
I mean, I was cool, though.
Yeah, same. I like to think so. Yeah.
I never turned invisible. People.
I think it was like another audio thing to play with.
I think it was.
I couldn't do a visual thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's how they identify her off the list.
It is, and it's why then Buffy goes and investigates in and around the band room, because that's where she left last, and she notices the ceiling ajar, and she goes up into her nest.
Yeah.
Calling it?
So when Marcy is, like, holding up the knife to Buffy while she's looking at the yearbook.
Yeah.
And then it's weird because it's almost in response to Buffy closing the yearbook that she then pulls away.
I've a feeling.
Yep.
Because she says, so it is you.
Yeah.
She sees her for the first time. She names her and she knows her. So it's in that moment Marcy feels seen by Buffy. So she chooses not to kill her. That's what I believe anyway.
I mean, there is no explanation, so I guess that'll do. Another one of those cases, you know?
Yeah,
I was thinking the same thing.
I don't know. Otherwise, I see it maybe it, like, Buffy's clearly about to leave, and then she's just, like, happy to let her leave. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. I honestly think, and because in the last scene, Marcy says to Buffy, I thought you were different. I thought you'd understand. So I actually think she's kind of been watching her, and she knows that Buffy's a bit of an outsider. And then when Buffy looks at the yearbook and she goes, Marcy Ross, so it is you. You know, I can tell from all of this that it is you. It's almost like Marcy feels like Buffy understands her and so doesn't kill her because she thinks possibly she'll be an ally. That's what I believe.
Maybe. While we're bringing up potholes, no one at home's noticed.
Well, that's because
she's missing.
She's been reported as a missing student.
That's why they even know to look for her.
So I feel like that's why, and that, I feel like that's why she's staying in the school, because she can't just stay at home as an invisible person.
Sure.
Okay.
So then Marcy goes after Cordy's teacher and like really escalates her level of crazy. It's like a proper intent to kill here, right?
Oh, was she actually was she definitely trying to kill the teacher? Because
maybe not, because she then wanted Cordy to find her, right?
And it was at the time, like, so Cordelia had like a scheduled appointment with his teacher. And so she comes in right before that.
Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe she wasn't trying to kill, but it's a risky move
to, like, kill someone. Like, I mean, to suffocate someone until they, like,
nearly
faint with a plastic bag and then a...
I do love how Cordy rushes into the room, pulls off the plastic bag, and the teacher's like, oh!
Straight away, she's fine!
Catches her breath, like, oh, that loose plastic bag's off my head, thank God.
I'm good now.
Oh, okay.
I stopped struggling because I thought there was no hope left, but
now I'm okay again. And then Marcy waits till she's in the room to write on the board, listen, because we have to keep coming back to that. So then we go to the scene where they're looking through the yearbook and it's, you know, have a nice summer, have a nice summer, have a nice summer. Now, like, I think you guys both went to much smaller schools than me, but there are definitely students from my class that I probably didn't know the name of.
I was a good school captain. I knew everyone's names, where they're from, their backstory.
I related to that. Like, I definitely would have had students that I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's more so because they're looking through the yearbook and both like Xander and Willow, and then eventually Cordy's like, never seen her before.
Yeah.
But it's not so much that they don't know her name, but it's like,
I feel like if I was to go through my yearbook, I really am annoyed that I forgot to bring mine, because I feel like if I went through it and went through my year level and like looked at all of the pictures, I'd be like, fuck, was that guy in my grade?
Oh, I think the point was that they were looking through and every single message was, have a nice summer.
There was no one person knew them. Yeah.
And then I liked that it was like, surprise, except Xander and Willow, you did it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Willow did say, have a great summer.
Yeah. That's how I cared. Yeah.
Yeah, you hold on to
look
that.
Look at you. You're just like everything Willow does. Yeah. Yeah. Willow is your angel.
She's lovely. Yeah, she totally is.
She really is. And the Hellmouth strikes again. People perceived Marcy as invisible, and so she became so because Hellmouth. That's why.
Giles' bit in this, where it's like, oh, I didn't think about looking at this at the quantum mechanical point of view.
Slams on the table, of course.
Physics.
Here we go. Yeah.
It's so like, I don't think that line makes sense for Giles. He's not a science nerd. He's not all about quantum mechanics and physics. And he, I don't think he knows anything about quantum mechanics. Like, yes, I don't buy it.
I don't buy it.
Yeah. And for him to like say it like that, like quantum mechanical physics for you laymen.
Yeah.
Don't buy it.
I think that next scene or two is like a flashback in the classroom.
It is.
When the teacher wasn't recognizing her.
Yeah. Wasn't even paying attention to her. Yeah.
It's so sad. Mm. It might have been the saddest part of Buffy yet for me.
Yeah.
Because if your kids don't see you, that's one thing. Like that's sort of that social thing. Mm. But
for the teachers not to see
you. For the teachers
either.
As well.
Yeah. It's pretty horrible to think of what that must feel like.
Yeah.
Because I think that happens.
Oh,
I really,
all the time.
Really
yeah. All the time. You just never hear from them sort of thing.
No. And it definitely, like it's all just made worse from her perception of the situation. You know, the teacher could be well aware of her and just happened not to call on her.
Totally.
And, you know, but it just feels like shit for Marcy.
Yeah. I love how you're always going to bat for the teachers.
She's instantly
there, ready to fight for the teachers' rights.
Teachers have a really tough job, guys.
I do.
I love it. It's great. So Cordy comes in to ask for Buffy's help. Terribly, Cordy. This is all about me.
I don't know why she needed to say me.
And she's come to Buffy because she thinks she's in a gang.
I was hoping you're in a gang or something.
You're looking for a face. What's your face?
I feel like they've worked really hard this episode to try and make Cordy more likable.
Mm.
Like, she is good to her boyfriend, like pretty good to her boyfriend, pretty good to her friend that fell down the stairs, a hardworking student, and, you know, she has real feelings and blah, blah, blah. And I think they do that to try and make it so you feel like you don't want her to die at the end, even though, like, if it was just straight off the bat, she was going to die, you know, she was about to die, I'd be pretty cool with it because she's been so terrible all up to this episode. Mm-hmm. And now they've sort of made that last ditch attempt. Oh, she's actually pretty cool. She's nice. You're supposed to be emotional about it, but
it's like they've put all...
She's terrible. She's an awful character.
Yeah, I must say, like, the more we've been watching season one, the more I've like been like, yeah, at the moment, Cordy is...
And so many characters have died, I wouldn't really care.
Yeah, well, I feel like you're right. In this episode, they try so hard to build her character, but they still throw in all these horrible, horrible elements of her. Like, case point, again, her first talking about, like, hitting the woman, not caring about her leg. Even, like, you say she has a nice boyfriend, but, you know, he goes in the hospital and she cares more about her photos with him than anything.
Yeah, I do feel like they still haven't really found the voice of Cordy that I come to know and love.
Yeah, and because... Yeah. And I don't think they know
I'm
it
really,
yet.
I'm interested to meet this other version of Cordy. I'm really
And I
curious.
I don't know about... Look, and it may be that it's just me. Like, perhaps you will feel this way about Cordy the whole way through. I mean, maybe she doesn't change as much as I think she does, but I just like the character. Buffy explains that Cordy's attacker is an invisible girl who Cordy doesn't know.
Oh, yeah, and then so...
But questions her fashion choice.
But then so, like, Cordelia said she goes into, like, witness protection service for Buffy. She's, like, recruited the Buffy gang and now she's got, like, a personal security guard.
I love that she just doesn't bat an eye at the fact that it's an invisible girl too. She's like, I don't care what it is, just fix it.
Yeah.
Just deal with it.
Yeah.
Just like totally fine with it. Which I guess in some ways is probably like if any person living in Sunnydale actually got like Buffy sat them down and was like, yeah, you're being chased by an invisible girl, they'd be like, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah.
What I've seen of Sunnydale so far, that checks out.
It's like, I was waiting for you to say it, but.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. That's totally normal. I agree.
Yeah.
So they're having the May Queen dance at the Bronze.
Oh, yeah.
Like, do they not have a gym at this school?
Well,
why do they have dances at the Bronze? This is like this venue
Yeah.
It's like...
it's a lot of business.
The perfect venue for everything in Sunnydale.
Yeah.
It's the only venue for anything.
So, yeah. So, Marthy has chosen the bronze to do her final, like, learn lesson thing.
Yeah.
So, she's put up...
her glitter learn.
She's put up, like, a fake sign outside that says, closed for fumigation.
Did she?
Oh, did she?
So when you go to the bronze, the sign outside says closed for fumigation. I'm like, again? Like, what?
It's 2 weeks ago.
But given that they're inside, like, it's clearly not actually being fumigated.
Yeah.
But also for that reason, it must be closed anyway. Or like I don't really understand.
Yeah. They just didn't tie the sign down, obviously.
Yeah. It's still, if you look, the sign says closed for fumigation. But I'm like, either it was already closed and she didn't need to do that.
Like, what they should have had there was closed for private party, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what that should have said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
shit job, prop guys. They were like, I can't be bothered buying a new sign, like making a new sign. Let's just use the closed for
but
fumigation.
But I can be bothered developing this picture of Willow and Giles for a long
time. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? I reckon there was one prop person who shipped Willow and Giles. Jillo. They were all over it.
Yeah.
Jillo.
Yeah.
Like
that's what happened, and they made that sign. That's what happened. Yeah, that definitely happened.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
So they decide to use Cordy's bait, but Marcy is watching. Like, why make a plan when there's an invisible girl around? You know she's going to be watching.
I guess maybe they haven't watched as many TV shows as me or as us, but, like, surely as soon as you hear about an invisible girl, you, like, go grab some talcum powder or something, right? Like, you just want to full on, like, make them visible.
So then we get this... this was a moment. So I feel like, I feel like up until now, they've been trying really hard to make Cordy someone you can actually care about.
Yeah.
I feel like they do that in this next scene.
I don't think they do.
I
don't buy it for a fucking second.
I guess
you go.
Go.
No, I want to hear what you say first.
Well, it's just that I know what that feels like. I felt that exact thing. I have been surrounded by people and felt completely alone. And I just feel, I mean, I have no idea what it's like to be popular or, you know, cool. But I know that feeling of being in a crowd and feeling completely alone. And I felt like that for me was relatable.
Yeah.
And that, so that moment just worked for me.
Well, yeah, I don't disagree with what she was saying. And I agree with that as being something relatable. But I just do not buy it from Cordy. And in that time, like, it's just... and her all of a sudden just deciding to share that and, like, make herself vulnerable with Buffy, and it just doesn't add up with the rest of her character at all.
That you've seen so far.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's great you can relate to that, but you also don't make other people feel small to make yourself feel big. You're a nice person.
True. And that I've written here, it doesn't excuse her bullying.
Yeah.
But it is one of the reasons I think I do relate to Cordy so
much. It's just a little too insightful all of a sudden for me. You know, at the end, and be like, well, it beats being alone all by myself. And it's just like, well, why is she dropping the guard now after all this time? You know, like, it just doesn't make sense that she wouldn't just stick with the act.
Because, I mean, she's in fear of her life right now. That's a moment that makes people
vulnerable. It comes across more like she's trying to, like, earn Buffy's sympathy and make her like, and I don't think she's that calculating.
I didn't read it like that.
I don't think she's as calculating as that, but it kind of comes across like she's only dropping her guard now and being vulnerable when, you know, Buffy's trying to take the side of this other person, and Cordelia's like, well, what about me? I know pain too. And I know that what she's saying is like you said, very relatable, but I just don't buy it from Cordelia all of a sudden, and it just seems too prompted, and she says this very specific, very all of a sudden insightful thing. And
I just feel like you don't know what's going to come up for you the moment you think you're going to die. Like, she's having, this is like, put yourself in her shoes for a minute. Regardless of how much of a bitch you think she is, how much of a bully you think she is, all of that stuff is true and it's not excusable. But in this moment, she is literally staring down the barrel of her potential death, and that's going to bring some stuff up.
But like, in the previous scene, it didn't mean that much to her. Like, the way she was talking about it. Let's just get it fixed. Get it fixed.
That's how Cordy manages situations. And again, I relate to this because the way I deal with powerfully emotional moments that I'm not ready to deal with is to brush them aside and laugh them off and be like, pretend like everything is fine. So I get that reaction in that moment. But then when she's alone with Buffy, she gets to have this. I just see it differently.
Yep,
I see it differently.
Don't buy it.
Yeah. I see it differently.
Other issue I have is when she goes into, what is it, the janitor's closet or whatever to change. Never tell anyone.
Don't ever tell anyone.
The fact that, you know, invisible girl, doors lockable from the inside, just doesn't seem like a The fact safe. That Buffy then gets locked yeah. out of it. The fact that safe. That was
why did she even lock the door? I mean, the only person outside is Buffy, so well, why does she need to lock the door?
I don't think she does. I think Marcy locks the door.
I didn't think that's a good one. Good. I like that. I didn't think about that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I just think that it just seemed set up for failure.
It did seem set up for failure. Like, did she even need to be in a separate room to Buffy to get changed? Could they not have gone somewhere?
I don't know why Buffy left.
Like, they're in locker rooms all the time getting changed with each other, so why did they need to be
in separate rooms? I don't know why Buffy left. Yeah. I don't know why the door was locked. I also don't know why they didn't anticipate more. Like, they know that she lives in the ceiling.
Yeah, good point. Buffy knows that. Like Buffy has literally seen that. They found
her nest in the ceiling. She's climbed through the roof to find her nest. They know that's how she gets around.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's like the basilisk.
Amazing. So the Scoobies go off and follow the sound of the flute because they want to find Marcy while Cordy's changing in the closet. They follow the sound into the basement to find a Tate playing the flute.
She's just willing to kill everyone.
Oops, locked in.
Yeah, straight up.
Gas she's blowing. All just yeah, really she's got to like, kill yeah, Honey Badger don't care. Yeah, so then Buffy gets knocked out and they wake up in the bronze, which again, I just don't understand why this is the location for the dance. I just don't.
Did you have to drag them from school all the way to the bronze?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Not possible. This whole thing is just like completely unreal.
I don't know how she got
there. How the hell did she do that?
But she also spent a lot of time in that glitter sign.
She really did. She's been planning this for a while.
Maybe she had a very good wheelbarrow.
Maybe she drove a car. Maybe she had a van ready.
Oh, yeah.
She drove them over in a van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's oh my god, back. Imagine seeing like the no one in the driveway.
Stop driving cars.
Amazing.
I get a kick out of it.
Marcy's going to give Cordy a face no one will forget.
Yeah, she's a super psycho. She's so calculated about this revenge and killing everyone left, right, and center, and like doesn't even want to just like kill Cordy. She wants to disfigure her face and let her live the rest of her life that way.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
So her face is numbed, right?
Yeah.
And I
how can she talk so well?
Because she shouldn't even be able to feel her lips right now. Absolutely.
Yeah, she shouldn't be able to talk like that.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
Also, so the dance is at the Bronx.
Yep.
Cordelia has to change into a dress to get ready for the dance.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And Marcy chooses the dance as the location for this to happen.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Why is no one like setting up the dance, or why isn't it like set up for a dance? Like, it's just serial killer den and no dance.
Well, no, there's curtains and stuff. Like,
yeah, there's a glitter sign that says learn. Yeah.
And the stage is set up with the throne.
Oh, yeah, and I get it because she's like, you guys are the lesson.
Yeah.
So I assume she was expecting an audience. But
what time is it? Because it's already dark. Yeah. Like, where is everyone? They should be arriving for the dance.
Or there should be at least a few people there still setting
up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a bit weird.
There's
so
many holes for this one. I didn't just realize, a lot of holes. Yeah.
Yep.
And we go back to the Scoobies. They're about to die. But who comes to the rescue?
I had to bring you the codex.
I came through the basement and I smelled the gas. Really? Right. No. The whole thing. There's a lot of plot holes this episode.
Yeah. So Giles can't, like, it's too hard for him to, like, turn the gas off.
Well, no, because the actual handle has been broken off. Yeah, but it's broken off.
And he closed it, like, a little bit. I don't know. I feel like I found it strange that he didn't use any of his clothing to, like, protect his hand. Like, you get much more grip by using a jacket or something.
Mm. Nobody's particularly intelligent in this episode. Let's be honest.
I mean, I guess they're inhaling a lot of gas.
Their brains are
fuzzy. Give them a break.
Yeah.
But yeah, Angel saves them.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. What good guy.
Good job, Angel.
Cordy got cut.
Yeah.
And then some red texture on her cheek. Oh, no. Don't you hate when that happens? A little red Sharpie on your cheek.
I want to know. So was Marcy's plan to just make a lot of scars? Like,
well, she was going to cut her. She was like, let's increase your smile. She was going to do the what I've described as the Joker facial.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It would have been bad.
It would have been bad.
Yeah.
I think she was just going to disfigure her completely, her face, essentially, was the plan. Yeah.
I feel like that would, like, to make irreversible face disfigurement damage without killing a person. I don't know. Like, I just don't know if she has the medical knowledge to do that much facial rearrangement.
Not at all.
I think you'd survive deep cuts on your face as long as you got to hospital pretty quick.
Yeah, but then I feel like it wouldn't, like, you can plastic surgery that back to normal.
If you actually cut pieces of skin away, though. And, like it wouldn't be I that guess, easy.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just... I've watched too much Grey's Anatomy where they just make miracles happen.
I mean, I've had a lump cut out of my stomach. Mm. Like, it was a, you know, like a, you know, precancerous or whatever, like a mole and a lump. Mm. And they were like, oh, you know, we'll definitely be able to, you know, get it and it'll be nothing. And it turned into a massive scar, you know, because it just, it's hard to seal the skin back together. And especially in a place like that, which is constantly moving because your face is constantly moving, you would, it would, I think it would actually scar pretty easily. Buffy tells Cordy to stop pampering her, but tells her to shut up, and she channels her inner badass. This slow-mo camera move with her hair sort of like slowly moving in the breeze as she listens for Marcy and then like hears the creak and like punches her. Awesome.
I find it ridiculous.
Oh my god, really? I love this scene.
It was just when she's like shut. I love the shut Cordy, up Cordy. Shut up. I love Cordy's face when she shuts up. But then you know Buffy's whole. It's like she's you know she's honing.
Her she's Zen Master. She's honing.
She's honing. Well, yeah. It makes a little sense if I think of her as a slayer and honing. Yes. But like the breeze with the breeze. My only problem was the breeze. I don't mind anything else. She's a slayer. She can hone.
They were wanting more movement in the scene.
Yeah, but it was just weird. Her eyes closed. The like rotating camera and like. Where is this wind coming from? It looks too much like other animated movies where it's like the magic that's like
and the way it's lit too. Like it's really brightly lit on her hair for some reason. It was a bit strange, but overall,
it was too magical.
I enjoyed it. That's all right.
I enjoyed it.
I mean, I did not enjoy it, guys. Don't make me such a party pooper.
Why do you hate Buffy?
I love Buffy. I love Buffy.
And the bodyguards are back. They're FBI. How did you feel about that? Do you have feelings?
I do have feelings on this bit.
Yeah.
And I fucking loved it. I loved it really? So much. I know. I was surprised myself that I liked it so much. Because just think about it, right?
Okay.
If some invisible person popped up and fucking around doing stuff. As if they wouldn't be abducted by the government and put into a secret organization where they're going to train up and kill spies and stuff. I love it. It's like, it's so campy and over the top, but at the same time, actually kind of realistic, I guess.
Yeah, you know? I get, like, at the end when they, like, have her, they finish off her story and she's joining the class of invisible kids, I'm like,
all the books open at the same time.
Yeah, the books open and it's assassination and infiltration. Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, government strikes again.
Fuck yeah.
I just love, all about it. I love Marcy's voice as well, where she flips to the pen and she's like, cool.
Yeah.
The minor thing, I don't like the page flip because you can see that she's already got the correct page open.
Yeah.
And so you can already see the page that she's getting to that's like quite a bit open with her thumb, but she's flicking through the rest of the pages and then eventually just turns the page to the page that she already has open.
Sure.
It's classic like book opening in TV shows.
Yeah.
Though, isn't
a little
it?
Bit. Yeah. Buffy's done that a few times actually. Oh, I didn't want to bring it up.
Yeah. It does it a lot. I really enjoy just before they take her away and they're all like, best you forget this whole incident. I was fully waiting for them to get like the Men in Black memory remover out, you know?
Yeah. It seems
have a good prom.
It seems a bit sloppy for them to me. I wonder if they're just like, oh, it's Sunnydale. These people choose to forget anyway. Our work is done for us.
Yeah.
No need for a cleanup here, guys.
Yeah.
Sorry, just in the classroom. Can invisible people see other invisible people? Like, I don't know how she knows sit in that chair and not sit on a person and the teachers. Like,
I don't know.
Like, I would have thought that the government would want a bit more control and would make them visible for those classes or something.
I don't think they put enough effort into that scene. Like,
it looked cool. It looked cool as it was.
But like the visual.
It was a great visual. Yeah. But I was like, is she going to sit on a person? How does she know not to sit on a person?
Yeah.
I did think that at the back of my mind. I'm like, you know what?
It looked cool.
Another cool Buffy ending. Bring it on.
Looked super cool.
So we just skipped one bit, which I just want to call back to again because I know you guys are against this, but I enjoyed this end scene first of all, Giles lies and says the janitor saved them because he doesn't want Buffy to feel bad about Angel being there and her not seeing him.
Oh, yeah.
And then second of all, Cordy comes over and says thanks to the Scoobies for saving her. Willow offers, you know, to have lunch with her, but she's pulled back in. She's pulled back into the popularity coolness. Like, she actually wants to be a human in that moment. She really does. You can see on her face that she's actually having to go against her own nature to be a bitch here. And I just wanted to call that out because I think that we will see more of this Cordy now.
Nut fucker.
You only don't like her because she was mean to your Willow.
No, she kind of sucks. She's funny, but she sucks.
I agree with you in the last scene that, like, I think the Cordelia in that scene really does look like she wants to make a change. And she's there and she's grateful. And if she wasn't pulled back by the popular crowd, I think, like, there was really room for her to want to join them. Mm. Again, I just didn't buy it. Like, it just all these points in the episode where she was making these huge leaps for change, it was too all of a sudden and too out of the blue, and I didn't buy it.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Good episode. Third best, I believe. Third best, big fan.
Nice. So wait, what does that put it in front of? What did you pip from third?
Because it would have been Puppet Show, then Pack. So I was pretty keen to put it there. Oh, yeah.
This is definitely better than...
I'm glad that you've done that.
Pack with an asterisk.
Pack with an asterisk.
Yeah.
Still Pack. favorite quote?
Oh yeah!
I was wondering why the hell you put my notes away.
Oh my god!
Yeah, you stole stuff.
Oh shit! It was one by Xander. Actually, not often. It was just sort of a throwaway line. You can just imagine one of the writers saying it to one of the other writers at some point. When I come over for dinner, Mum's making her famous call to a Chinese place.
Yeah, that was a good one. I did enjoy that line too.
Look, I honestly can't remember a lot of quotes from this episode. So I'm going to give it to, because I did just find it a funny moment, Snyder after.
This is my second. This is my second place.
Yeah, this one was my second place too.
I really hope it's the same one. But yeah, there's no dead students here this week.
Yeah, that was it.
Don't sue.
Don't sue.
Don't sue.
Classic Snyder.
Mine was a Giles one this week, and it was when they were, it's when the three Scoobies are looking through the yearbook and they're all like, have a nice summer. Have a nice summer. Oh, God. And Giles is all like, oh, once again, I teeter at the precipice of the generation gap. Because he doesn't know what they're talking about. Yeah. I enjoyed that thoroughly. What won the episode for you this week?
For this week, I'm going to give it to just the concept. Just the very simple concept of a girl who everyone ignores and no one pays attention to, feeling invisible and then actually turning invisible. I think it was a perfect story for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago I asked, why is this set in a high school? There's no reason. And I think this is a perfect reason for that. And it works with the Hellmouth. And I think it's just a really cool idea for an episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
So nice concept.
One. Like it.
Nice. Yeah, I think what won it for me is just the whole FBI angle and the end of the episode.
Very cool. Yeah, yes.
I was super into, especially because for the first time I noticed the FBI earlier in the episode than I ever had before. So I liked their placement throughout, and then the fact that they've just recruited a whole bunch of invisible teenage assassins.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Loved it.
Yep.
Nice.
Don't give it to Colin.
I know, I don't. It's controversial because for me, this is the first time we really see this next side to Cordy. And for me, I mean, I've been clear about the fact that Cordy is an important character for me and I really do relate to her. And there are a lot of things, as I've talked about this episode, a lot of things that I really relate to in this episode. So I'm going to give it to the increase of depth in Cordy.
Cool. Cool. Yep. It's her first episode. Yep. And I was really excited like when she was just really featured heavily in the first scene. Like, cool, more Cordy. Let's do it.
Yeah. So tell us where we can find you, Chris.
Twitter, Instagram, CreeSlip, C-R-E-A Slip. I'm part of a sketch comedy trio, The Pool Boys. Pool Boys Comedy on Instagram and Facebook. Check it out.
Check it out.
Yeah, it happened.
I'm scared. I'm scaredy. We're just going to need to get like a just general group of rapping Chris.
Follow me on Twitter for no real reason other than I want some followers.
Don't we all?
At Mabel Meboard.
I think I have 17.
Oh yeah. I think I shouldn't talk myself. I do have like a bunch of followers.
Oh, do you?
I think I've got like 50 or something.
Oh, oh that, dude, that's pretty fucking good. That's way better than me.
I don't know who, like I made it in 2007. I think I haven't gotten a new follower in like the last 8 years or something. Anyway, give me some followers.
Give me.
I'd like some followers too. Miggles French. Please follow me on Twitter. Please. I'm also on YouTube, you can find me on Instagram. It's just like my random Instagram about my life, really. And follow us on Twitter, Buffy Straya, Straya, and on Facebook, Buffy the Vampire Straya. And then you can also send us an email if you want to give us a longer message. It's buffythevampirestraya@gmail.com.
Give us a rating. Give us a review online.
Do
subscribe.
All that. Yes, do subscribe. It. Rate us on iTunes. Do all the things. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you're loving, what you're not. Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, get vocal, guys.
One more episode for season one.
Oh, my God. It's so exciting.
Is it a good
Holy
one?
Crap. Yeah.
Oh.
I think so.
A firm nod.
I think it's up there with Angel.
Cool.
In its goodness.
I'm excited.
Got good qualities.
Sick. All right, cool. Got good qualities. Very excited.
Woohoo! Woo! Thanks for listening, guys.
See you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Episode though.
Yeah.
She.
But her voice is cool.
Was born in 1977 to Rosemary Hatch and actor Steph Duvall. So she's the daughter of a lesbian couple.
Huh.
Oh.
Nope. Steph Duvall is a male. I just assumed. Steph Duvall seemed like that. Well, it seemed like that, right? It seemed like it was going to go that way.
I hope you leave that in.
Such a build up to that as well, because you're like, she was born.
Yeah. I'm like, you might have started the same way that was the case. Shut up. You shut up.
Your notes are so
gonna have
juicy.
To get your notes back out. What are you doing? That was bad.
Ew.
So, I'm just gonna cut this. Yeah, it's too gross to even describe. Yuck. I wondered why you put your notes into that cup already. God.
Gross.
Sucks.
Sticky.
It's delicious, like mango-y, all right? Chill it.
Okay. Tell us. What's your favorite quote? Cue theme music. Australians watching Buffy. It's Buffy the Vampire Straya. Ah, good time.